Well, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to go ahead and get started. Several things to talk about and mention here today as we start. One is Toni is away for her annual sister weekend. She's got three sisters. There's four girls in her family. They go off with her mom. They're at the Amana Colonies this weekend doing what girls do when they're grandmothers and great-grandmother. So she's having a good time, but of course, you got to have pity on me because me and Jacob are alone surviving. But she'll be home this afternoon, and I'll try to get the house picked up because we had fun yesterday setting up racetracks with Tyler. So anyway, that's where Toni's at today. She'll be back this afternoon. She'll be around tomorrow night. Jacob's home for a month. Just got in from South Korea. And he'll be heading back to South Korea until February or so, I think. And then he's going to be going to a base in England for a year or so, 2 years. And so he's been in South Korea since February. And he's gone up into that demilitarized zone for a while. He's got right up there on the border. And so he's right there in the thicket of things and has some interesting stories and activities. So ask him about that. I do have a card. Some of you may have got this in the mail, a little postcard just saying we're back, and the dates are on there. So there's some extra ones laying there. If you want to take those for Monday or Tuesday, remind people. And then, while I was gone, we haven't had class for 75 days. And this is the longest I haven't taught Bible since 1992 when I left Tulsa, took about a year off. And then otherwise I've had somewhere, somehow, teaching somewhere going on 3, 4, 5 times a week sometimes. And so this is kind of scary for me because when you get in that, it's like getting up and brushing your teeth every day. You just kind of have Bible study. Well, I haven't had Bible study for 75 days, so I'm like I told someone, I was scared about two things this morning. One, what if no one shows up? And two, what are you going to do if they do show up? And so this was a lose-lose situation for me. And so anyway. While I was not doing anything, this is interesting because, you know, you go through things we all go through this. It's kind of like, I'm not doing anything, God's not using me, where's my gift, what should I be doing, am I wasting my time? And we all have to check ourselves, and a lot of times we get into some kind of futile activity, and I know I do myself. But these are some things, all this happened or was sent to me in the last 75 days. And this is with me doing just about absolutely nothing ministry-wise except, you know, whining to God or something about something. But I've got, for example, I'll just very quickly. One, this just happened yesterday. I was asked to write an endorsement for this book. It's online. You can look it up and you can actually find it. It's a great little book. But, I mean, that's interesting that they'd ask me. And the thing is, as they say in here, they kind of saw what I did and thought, and this guy walks through Israel. He travels on foot through Israel. So I've been to Israel 3 times, wrote a book on Jerusalem, but nothing like this. This guy walks around Israel. I mean, on foot, camps, in different campsites. And so, I mean, way completely out of my league as far as that. Another one, just an email I received, it's been tracking along with you on your framework workbook through the video link. So those all those videos we put up, they've got a framework book, and they're just going through it. And the reason they sent me this email was at some point they'd lost connection with the link that they were following, and I just sent them a refresh link, and they said, oh, we're back up and running. So I'm not sure what happened there, but it was interesting that as soon as they lost contact, they're like, we got a problem. So, they're using the framework book at home. The next one. This guy, a lot of these people, you don't know who they are. They send you emails, they're just names, you know. And he says, great notes on Ephesians. I teach some of Florida's prisons. And this is where they're using my material in the prison. And the next one, that was in Florida. Some of you know this because I put it on Facebook. But the Colorado State Penitentiary, the chaplain there, asked if I could, because all my videos are free and they're available for download, just take them, do whatever you want to. But he says, I want to get permission because someone had purchased, a couple ministries had come together and purchased a system where they can feed TV links, you can read exactly what it says here, into prison cells. And the people they're feeding it into are housing our high security facility housing high risk men who are have limited time out of their cells and do not attend programs. Most of them are in some kind of lockdown, and so their only communication is very limited. But they're going to have this channel pumped in. That is, right now, the second email, I said, well, I can send you some books, too. You know, so I send him a box of framework books. And now he's received the books, and they're right now feeding in the Romans series into the cells. What we taught right here, just chapter by chapter, verse by verse through Romans. And now, is anybody watching it? Is any of the prisoners tuning in saying, oh, I can't wait until to watch it? Or maybe they're just flipping through it, going to something else. But it's there. Again, several reasons why that's positive is, one, they found it. Two, they thought it was useful enough. And three, if it's there, it could impact, the Word of God could impact someone's life. And so, and again, what did I do? I mean, what did we do? Nothing. We just meet here, record it, put it online, and this stuff's all happening. Someone was using the J. Vernon McGee, the five volumes of J. Vernon McGee. You've heard him on radio. He's got a five-volume set. Very useful. It's through the Bible commentary. They're using his, but they bumped into our material on Jeremiah, and they thought, wow, not that it's better, but it added so much more insight because of the maps and the details that they've now, you know, set that momentarily aside, and they're using our material for the Jeremiah teaching because it's like, well, it's, you know, the maps are there and stuff. And so that's interesting. This goes on. The next, another book. And this guy's a best-selling author, Mike Mason. Again, I went on he's got this book on Israel where you see Jesus, historian, stone. That's a picture I took, the cover of the book. Plus, there's 12 total pictures in the book. He uses 90 pictures. But basically goes through and shows things that Jesus would have been familiar with or seen in his day that's still there in stone throughout Israel. And he says, I've also listened to many hours of your talks and sermons, which was very gracious of him. But this guy, you go to Amazon, and he's got some bestseller books on Amazon, which is, again, nice. And there's a detail about the book. Then we've got the app up and running. And help me out if I do this wrong, Clint. There's the one for iTunes or iPhones, and then there's the one for Android. And those are the two links, and you may be familiar, may have already used them. But it is a great detail. Reps and Sets is on there. There's audio teaching. There's a radio that's continually teaching. There's some links where we can use to, you know, push out messages when we use that. So anyway, take a look at that. You can just Google it and find it, or you can use those links right there. Page 3, and that's very, I mean, I don't want to be, you know, that's a great tool. I mean, some people, this is their life, is the world of apps. I'm still a boomer trying to act like a millennial, and so I'm not, you know. But on page three, this is just last week. I had to get two maps to get all the dots on there. But those are all the places that were on generationword.com in the last 7 days. That's Friday through Friday last week. It wouldn't include Saturday or Sunday. But that's the countries. I mean, that's what's going on. I mean, people around the world are finding it, using it, and we're not doing anything except just putting it out there. I mean, so I guess 51 of the countries in the world, there's 195 countries in the world, 51 of them were on Generation Word last week at some point. Then here's just a bunch of comments that were positive. I didn't get any negative comments. A couple things weren't working, and people asked if I could fix them. Someone criticized one of my Greek references because they spelled the word wrong. It's like, which I appreciate because, yeah. But otherwise, you can see that. Anyway, that's what's taken place in Generation Word in the last, and that's all fresh stuff in the last 75 days, and stuff that people have that we could document. There's other things happening. So that's encouraging to me. Now, the reason that's encouraging to me is because, as you know, I had back surgery. And last time you saw me, I was in great pain. Last time we had class was 75 days ago. Since that time, I went to school, came crawling into school. Everybody saw I had a problem. There's about a three-week period, where I don't remember certain things. Like Bill walked in today. When Bill walked in, it's like, I remember talking to Bill on my deck this summer. And it's like, I never would have recalled because I was in the middle of that pain I was in. And the surgeons even said, they said, you were under so much pain, the stress was so great that there's certain things that were messing up. I mean, it's just, were, you know, like almost like a state of shock. And so there's a lot of things I don't remember. This is why I wish Tony was here, because I'll tell you some details. And Tony always stops and corrects me. It's like, no, that's not what happened. And but anyway, I went to school for the first 4 or 5 days or so. And it was just, I couldn't do anything. I couldn't lift my arms above my head. I couldn't do anything except just shuffle around. I didn't know what I was going to do. The principal didn't know what I was going to do. And he suggested, just go home, take a break. I says, I can, but he says, I can take a break, but as soon as I come back, nothing's changed. I've just took a break. Something's wrong. They had me scheduled for an MRI on September 24th. I had surgery on September 1st. And of course, that would be a long time to wait. And so what ended up happening, I had an early out, 1 o'clock dismissal, because you have teachers' meetings, which are worthless. And so I figured, I told the principal, I said, I'll just skip. And I just went home that day, didn't go to school that day. And I'm just laying on the floor. I don't want to say crying, but basically just groaning, crying. I can't move, can't eat. I can't put my hand to my mouth. The last week or two before I had surgery, we'd go eat somewhere, and I couldn't. And Tony would have to put food in my mouth if we went to a restaurant. If I was at home, I'd lay on the floor with a towel and just shovel food in like this. I'm just laying flat, just like, you know. And anyway, Tony comes to school, and I'm just miserable. I'm just laying at home, crying, moaning, can't do anything, can't even think rationally. And she tells the athletic director she works with, and says, I don't know what I'm going to do. I mean, he's just laying at home, can't do anything. She's got a big crying old man baby at home, and she's concerned. And because how's it going to get better? And so he goes, hey, he says, the back surgeon at Iowa Orthopedics, he says, he used to be my second baseman when we won the state championship at Ankeny. He says, let me give him a call. So he calls the doctor who does the back surgery, and he says, bring him in today. So I went in, and as soon as they saw me, they says, you know, they did a couple x-rays, they saw me, and of course, I couldn't stand up straight. They says, we're putting you in a hospital, we're going to find a place for you, we'll do surgery tomorrow. We got to cut off a couple bulging discs. They can see a couple bulging discs, you'll be in and out. Then I went to the hospital, they did an MRI, and when the doctors came in the next day and saw the MRI, they say, no, we can't do surgery today. And I didn't remember this part. I'm laying there, but I don't remember this part. I told a story to someone, and Tony stopped, rewound it. So I was going to have surgery the next morning. I thought I had surgery the next morning. He said, no, they came in, showed you the MRI that shows just a complete train wreck, including a crushed disc at the bottom, 3 vertebrae that are just all out of place. And they said, this is going to take all day. So they scheduled me for the next day, opened up their whole schedule, and I went in at 8, came out at 4. It was basically 5.5 hours of surgery, I guess. And they cut off the bulging disc, if you care to know. They rebuilt the disc. They put like a U where they slipped something in. And now I'm 6'2" again. And then they put 2 rods and 6 screws to pull my vertebrae back into place. And there's other things. So there's so much pressure inside the spine that the spine, it was completely dark, and they had to clear out, the vertebrae. There's a disease or something. But anyway, it's a gift. I mean, you say, oh, poor Galen. It's like, no, it's a gift for where I'm at. I just can't mess it up. When I came out of surgery then, of course, I was afraid to move. Because the last thing I remember was like, ah. And there's 3 nurses trying to get me to roll over. It's like, I wouldn't roll over. Because it's like, no. They just tried. So I moved my arm. It's like, I remember this. Like, oh, my gosh. Then I rolled over. Then when the doctor came, I said, am I going to mess up what you did? They said, no. They said, you can't. I thought, you know, you roll over and a screw pops out your back or something. It's like, no, it's a package. That's not your problem. And so I moved over, and it's like instantly the pain was gone. And of course, you had to go through the healing, but that was, I mean, the healing was nothing compared to the before. I got off that medicine right away, that codeine, whatever you call it. I got off that as quick as I could. And it was within about a week. I wasn't taking any Tylenol, no nothing. So that was kind of nice. Started walking right away, so I've been walking. Didn't used to be able to stand like this without just constant, or walk into Hy-Vee was just, couldn't do that. Couldn't walk into Hy-Vee. And now I'm walking 3, 4, 5 miles at a time, standing up, trying to be smart. I've got Tony constantly telling me, don't. You lift this, don't pick that up, which I appreciate. Now Jacob's in charge of that. That's why he's here, making sure I don't move something. Yeah, and I'm teaching school again, running class, you know, playing with the kids. But there's certain things I just can't do, and because of it's been fixed, but all that pressure that was on the middle is going to go to the other disc, and I've got to make sure I'm 57. I don't want to have back surgery again, and so I just got to be smart. But otherwise, that's very good. Now, that's the surgery. I'm in good shape. I'm walking. I'm happy. But the 75-day, of course, you had that whole process of recovering. And that's when I was sharing this. It's like, you know, you start to reflect. And one of the things that was huge for me, and again, we all are getting old. We all are facing old age. But I got scared. Not from the surgery, but from the condition I was in before and after the surgery of where I couldn't do anything. I mean, I was just laying. I mean, I had to have someone help me get in and out of bed. I had to use a walker. They had a little tie around me. They'd help me walk with a walker down the hall. And the nurses had like a hold of this thing, you know, like a harness. And I kind of thought, well, a little nurse holding a harness. And it's like, if I go down, she's going to do one of two things. She's going to let go of the harness or she's going to come with me. I mean, what is going to happen? I didn't say anything. It's like, they know what they're doing, but it's like, then they gave it to Tony. And now Tony's, I got to get to Bible class. But Tony, we come home from the hospital, and the nurse says, well, it's time for him to go home. She goes, he can't even walk. He goes, she'll be fine. She says, we come in our house, and we go up four or five steps to get into the living room. And then we got more steps. And she's been talking about, we got to get rid of this house because we got all these steps because we're getting old. And I said, we're running 10 miles a day. I mean, we can walk them down steps. Where all of a sudden, her fears were like, oh, my gosh, I come home, it's like, four steps. And then I get up those, like, more steps. And I begin to realize, oh, my gosh. I mean, how fragile we are. I mean, we know this, but also it's like, you're just that far. I'm just that far away from being an old, elderly man. Well, anyway, she's talking to the nurse. And says, well, it's time. No, he'll be fine. You can do it. And she starts crying. She goes, I don't want to take him home yet. What do I do with him? And again, this is legitimate complaint. And I told her later, I says, listen, I've been with you 6 times in the hospital when you brought a baby home, and you never cried once when you brought a baby home. Now you're bringing me home, and now you're crying. What's wrong? And then she, obviously she says, they weren't an old man. And so, you know, that was a thing we had to go through. But, you know, I was facing, again, nothing different than anybody else, but for me it was the first time. I'm facing old age or being elderly, like through up front, through a again, I've recovered. I'm still 57. I feel good. I'm walking. But right there, I was looking at it close up, and it's something I'm scared of. I'm scared of certain things. I'm not scared of dying. I like to die. But I made my mind up for sure. I want to die in the battle. You know, sometimes you feel sorry for the people that died in the battle. Okay. But think about those that didn't die in the battle, and they've got to go home and grow old. And I'm thinking, just a perspective, just a comment, don't judge me. But it's like, I'd rather die in the battle, on the battlefield, lights out, it's over, than to live through the battle and go home and then grow old and have people hold harnesses and you know, help me sit up. And, you know, it's like, and just not be able to walk downstairs. And so anyway, that's something I never even thought of before. It was not even a fear on the radar screen. Now all of a sudden it's like, wow. So keep that, and that's it. There's 1,000 things I can say. Well, it had been bothering me for a long time. There was a moment where we ran 4 miles that morning. It was a Saturday. We ran 4 miles that morning. Came home. I did 15 pull-ups. You know, like my back hurts. It always hurts. It's hurt for 25 years, and I got to keep getting it adjusted and stuff. But I was sitting on a bucket then, leaning over. I built a new room for my new office that didn't get finished, which is also disappointing because I've got stuff all scattered. And I was sitting on a bucket leaning forward, shooting a nail gun. Boom. And I just, when I stood up, it was like right there was, and I couldn't recover from that. And so that was the disc that was like 50% gone. It was already gone. It's just that's a thing that I didn't recover from. Otherwise, you could go to the chiropractor and do different things. But, yeah, that's That's the thing that, and again, this summer I was carrying sheetrock by myself. I was hanging it by myself. But you just can't do, I mean, I will ask for help moving this back each Sunday because my days of moving that desk are done. Otherwise, you know. But other than that, this I can set this up. And cars bother me. Like little cars, like Tony's car, sit down in that little car. That bothered me. My pickup's easier. So. All right, there you go. Yeah, but don't hurt yourself. I mean, don't hurt yourself. Anyway, so yeah, I'm happy. I'm good. I just got to be careful. I stand up straight. And I wish Tony was here to say something because she could say something more intelligent. Anyway, so that's it. And I'll end that with that. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. It was real. It expanded. But it also, you know, there's times where you're just crying out for just direction, confirmation. Because one of my thoughts, and again, you can think your own thoughts and you can judge me and everything, which is fine. But it's like, I want to be significant. I think we all want to be significant. We become Christians. Becoming a Christian is like in two phases. One, you get saved, you're not going to hell. Hallelujah. And then all of a sudden you realize you're part of the body, you're part of the mission, you're part of the team. It's like, well, what did you do? Because part of the Bible talks about getting saved and seeking the Lord and finding the Lord. But then after that, there's that whole section on, now, he's doing something with you. What are you doing in response to yourself? Not just, I don't sin. More on the part, what are you doing? And it made me look back. I mean, I had a lot of time. I mean, just, and then you know this, if you've ever been in a situation like this, you wake up at 1:30 in the morning, and then you're awake until 5. And you just lay there. You can't get up and do anything. First, you can't get out of bed. Two, there's nothing to do. And so you just lay there, and you think about things you've never thought before, things that could go wrong, or looking back at things of your life that you've made mistakes on, or things you, and it's like, things you thought you were good at, and you look back, maybe I'm not. And it's just this terrifying time of thoughts. Again, it can be bad and it can be good. I mean, part of it is, you know, judgment day is coming, and you're going to go through that, you know, with the Lord face to face. It's kind of nice to do it ahead of time, maybe. And so some of this stuff, I just wonder, that's why this right here, this little paper right here, is not a brag, it's not a boast, but it's kind of like, okay. Because I was looking for, I don't want to say a word from God, but I'll say a word from God, a direction. What's my next step? Because you got this time of like, I'm going to now make some changes. And yeah, certain changes. But then what about the ministry? You know, what? Because have I done it right? It's like, is it effective? Is it? So what am I going to do different? What am I going to do? And I struggled. I even last week, I went out for like a 4-mile walk. And I told God, I'm going to walk until I get some direction. I'm just going to keep walking until I get direction. Because coming back and teaching again, I know what I'm re-engaging in. And it's like, is this what you want your life to be? Just, or is there something else? Is there something you're not seeing? And for that whole period, I'm looking. I'm listening, I'm waiting, I'm praying, I'm crying out. What am I missing? I mean, is there something that I'm not complete? Because someday, and this is a real, again, fear of mine, concern of mine, is I believe, as you would too, that we're going to die and enter into the presence of the Lord. And it's going to be a glorious moment. It's going to be very pleasing. It's the light at the end of the tunnel and all kinds of things like that, whatever. But there is that accountability. It's like there is an evaluation. And some people are going to hear, well done, thou good and faithful servant. But that's not a universal, just because you got saved doesn't mean well done. It's like some are going to receive, you know, different levels of reward. And again, what have I taken and selfishly created my own little ministry, my own little niche and gone off track? Maybe. Where did I get on this road? Where did I make this mistake? And it's like, what should I be doing? I mean, I should be teaching school. I got to have a career. I got to be a good husband. Got to be a good father. I got to take care of my family. But it's like, ministry-wise, what do I need to change? And I finally came to this. It's like, because, you know, I look on internet stuff, and there's good ministries out there. There's good Bible teaching out there. Go to them. You know, I don't need, maybe I'm messing things up. But as I came, one of the things I came to the conclusion of, and I'm ready to trash the whole thing and do what's right. But what am I going to change? It's like, I think you just do what you do. I mean, it's like, I'm going to keep teaching. I'm looking at retirement from school teaching in about 4.5 years. And so I've kind of got to keep this moving for about 4.5 years. And then at that point, I can do this full time, if I can say that, you know, whatever that means. If I'm still alive, if my back's still, you know, whatever. I mean, what is God's will? But it's like, I've got to keep this going, and then I can really dig in and do it more, do it better, spend more time putting notes together. So, but yeah, I mean, that was one area of prayer. The other area was, you know, praying for Tony, because... And she's fine. Tony is okay. So don't pray for Tony, talk to Tony. But one of the concerns was, you know, she's got this big old baby at home that can't do anything, and she's gotta go to work, she's gotta come home, and I'm, you know. And so there was, and she missed a lot of work just sitting in the hospital. Oh man, I'm wasting your time. Well, this is funny. This is just how I don't know what's going on. I'm laying in the hospital bed. I don't know what time of day it is. I assume it's night, and it was night. But I'm asleep, and all the lights are on. The nurse comes in every bit, you know, and does stuff, you know. And I'm still on medication, which between you and me, it's good stuff. that's why I wanted to get off it right away, because there's three of my nurses told me that they'd gotten, when they had surgery, they got it hooked on it, and they had to have help getting off of it. So as soon as I got home, I mean, Tony took I took a couple of the serious pills, and I didn't need them anymore. And so Tony has it hidden somewhere. I don't know where it's at. Now we got to get rid of it officially. But that was one of the things. But anyway, it's a good story. Anyway, so I was on my phone or something, or I had my phone on the side of my bed, and it fell on the floor. And a nurse came in, and I said, in my mind, I said, my phone fell, could you get it for me? And in my mind, she tells me, you've got to learn to take care of yourself. You need to get it yourself because you've got to start recovering or something like this. We're not going to pick it up for you. Well, so what I do, I then text Tony, come get me out of here. I'm tired of these nurses being rude to me. They won't pick my phone up off the floor. Now, you see the problem with that story. They won't give me my phone. What are you using to text? And then she came. And you know what she does? She's at home. Finally got to go home and sleep at home one night. She gets a text message from at 2:30 in the morning. She goes, you know, what's going on? So she gets in. She drives out there. And, of course, I'm asleep. And she wakes up. And she said, I thought you went home last night. She goes, you text me. I said, I text you. And she says, the nurse wouldn't pick your phone up. You dropped your phone. It's like, oh, I remember that. How did I text you? And she was just like, oh. And so that was just one of the many situations where Tony's, you know, living her normal life, taking care of this crazy drugged up baby out here in the hospital. And then she's got to bring, and she literally was crying when she brought me home, because it's like, I don't know what to do. And she was scared because I couldn't walk. I get in with a walker. And I'm looking at the stairs, and now it's her going to get me upstairs to a bedroom. And it's like, oh, and then all the other things that go with a situation like that. So we were, as soon as I gained consciousness, it's like, we have to take care of Tony. I mean, otherwise, I says, you're going to be in the situation I'm in if we don't. So we try to take some breaks, and I try to pretend I didn't, try not to, you know, complain, you know. But, you know, so anyway. You know, she's okay, she's good, but I was concerned with her for a while that she would be the one that gets broken down and stuff. So,
Yeah.
Oh, good. Well, thank you. Thank you. Because that, I was considering, you know, it's like, is this, you know, Saint trying to take me out? You know, I wasn't discouraged, but you were reflecting. And it's like, and, you know, and so, yeah, I considered that too, that this is just a, you know, just keep going. And that's why, again, like I put this together. It's like somewhere, somebody, and these are just people that respond. There's people out there using. And there are some significant names that come across. There's a couple doctors that emailed me that are using, I mean, doctors of theology that complimented me on one because they're using certain things. It's like, I mean, some people don't know that I'm a middle school shop teacher that spends most of my time playing with Hot Wheel track and stuff at home, you know, and just trying to squeeze in a Bible study now and then. So it's like, it's just, it is what it is. And I've decided, obviously, we're going to just keep right on going. And like I said, I was concerned that no one would be here. And now that you are here, I'm concerned that you're here. And you're going to, it's like, so yeah, my confidence level is about like this, which is probably a safe place for it to be. Okay. On your notes that you've got right here, you may remember we're in Acts chapter 20. And when we finish the book of Acts, we're going to be going, Paul will end up in prison at the end of the book of Acts in the rented apartment. And it's during that two-year time that he writes the prison epistles, Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians, writes a letter to Philemon. And we will then stop and go through those. We're going through Philippians on Tuesday nights right now, so that's going to be kind of hard to reteach right away. But we'll go through Ephesians. We've gone through Ephesians already. We've already gone through Colossians on Tuesday nights a couple years ago. We'll go through that again here. And then we'll follow that with the letter to Philemon. And, you know, that might be 4 years to get through those. I don't know. And then maybe it'd be time to go through Philippians again, or at least breeze through, at least put it in record here. But he is right now, the year, as you can see on this map, and this map, I've made a change to this map from last time, because as you see right here, but Paul had been, this is the year 55 to 57 AD, and Paul has been in Ephesus for 3 years, building a church, teaching daily in a lecture hall. It's changed the city. It's changed the culture. So much so that we talked about this, the sale of idols, the little silver statues that people like leave as tokens for the Artemis, Temple of Artemis, the sale of those has gone down. It's affected the economy of the city. And the silversmiths and the transportation department and anyone that's involved in the business, the little shop owners that are selling these things, are rioting in Ephesus because of Paul and his message. It's not just a message. It's not just, you know, like we get upset about, you know, hate speech and stuff like this. It's not just speech. It's made a change. The Word of God has come to Ephesus and people are changing their lifestyles so much so that idol worship is dropping off and money has changed. That causes a riot. That's right around 55 AD. Paul from Ephesus has written to the Corinthians. He's written 1 Corinthians from Ephesus, saying he wants to stay there until Pentecost and then leave. And he's going to do that exact same thing. From there, he's sent Titus, as you know, over to Corinth. There's Corinth over here. And Titus has been sent over here to solve some problems. This is all review. And Paul then leaves Ephesus and moves up to Troas, seeing an open door. He doesn't want to stay there. This is written in 2 Corinthians. He doesn't want to stay there because he's concerned about Titus and the Corinthian church. So he continues up and meets, apparently in Philippi, in Macedonia, he meets Titus who's gone up here. They meet each other, and at that point right here, he writes 2 Corinthians down, and we went through 2 Corinthians. He writes that and says, I'm coming down, and he deals with several things, including the collection of the offering that they're going to be taking over to Jerusalem for the saints that are suffering there. So Paul now spends some time in Macedonia, but we're going to see here in these chapter 20, in these verses, these first six verses of chapter 20 are going to basically summarize about a two-year period. So, I mean, there's a lot of condensing going on there, including the use of the word us for the first time since Paul was in Corinth the last time. Because what had taken place was Luke has been left up here in Macedonia, and he's been there for a period of time. He's from Troas. Remember when they came through Troas on the second missionary trip, they picked up Luke. On the second missionary trip, all of a sudden, we have the word us being used because Luke now, the writer of the book, is joining Paul on this ministry team. He goes over here and helps start the church of the Macedonian, Thessalonica, Berea. When Paul goes down to Corinth and they start the church there, Timothy and Luke stay up in here, and Luke appears to stay there the entire time building this area of ministry by himself or without Paul. When Paul comes up here at this time, leaving Ephesus in 55 AD, after having written 1 Corinthians and writes 2 Corinthians, he meets Luke again, and Luke starts using the word us again. Paul then comes down to Greece. The last map I gave, I referred to this last time, many, many weeks ago, that Paul comes down to Corinth in Greece. But remember, while he's in Corinth, he's going to write the letter to the Romans. He's going to write that in 57 AD, in the winter of 56, spring of 57. He's going to write the letter to the Romans and give them some information. In chapter 15, he's going to say that from Jerusalem all the way around to Illyricum, he has preached the gospel with signs and wonders, and he's proclaimed the word to the Gentiles. But we have no record of him going over to Illyricum, which is this northwest province right here. The Adriatic Sea is right here, and Rome is right here. The second map down there on your front page, I've got a red line going across there, the Ignatian Way. And it comes all the way across here. It comes right through, as we know, we went through this in Philippi. It goes right through the main street of Philippi. It goes right through the main street of Philippi and comes right on over and comes out here. Then there's a seaport. And then there's where it ships itself straight across over here to Italy. And then they pick up the Via Appia, or the Appian Way, which goes straight into Rome right there. So this is Via Ignatia, or the Ignatian Way. It's a road. And there's a picture of it right there on the map. See right there, that picture on your front page? That is one of many pictures of the Ignatian Way. You can walk on it, drive on it. Look how nice it looks. I mean, imagine our interstates 2,000 years later. I mean, can you imagine our interstates looking like this? I mean, you can still drive cars on Via Appia, the Appian Way, or the Ignatian Way. In many places, they're still there. There's still Roman markers. There's still bridges, Roman bridges, going over small creeks and stuff that were part of this way that you can still walk on. And so anyway, my assumption, and a safe assumption, is because in these verses he's going to say, after he encouraged, traveled many places, spoke many things of encouragement, he's going to end up in Corinth. My assumption is, since he's on the Ignatian Way, he's going to just go all the way across over here to Illyricum, hitting some cities, talking, spreading the gospel. Maybe some churches have started because of the mass of the Philippi. Because remember, in the letter to Philippi, it says the whole world has heard about, you know, their own experience. And so maybe they've started some churches. I'm going to assume, and this is an assumption, we know he ends up in Corinth. He either comes straight down here. Somebody's got to go from Macedonia to Corinth. Because when he gets to the Corinth, he says, I've gone into Illyricum. It's a safe assumption that he's just from here, instead of going straight down. He follows the Ignatian Way over here, then takes a ship, and you see the dots I've added there, takes a ship right here, hits the Isthmus Canal right here, and comes into the city of Corinth, where he's going to spend 3 months and deal with some situations there as we see. Now, from that point, that's what I'm going to read to you right now. And you can see on this chart right here on the page, you can see the dots I've added to it. You can see the Ignatian Way. You can see a picture of it. And now we're going to go over to, well, let me just read here from the scripture. You can see some of the notes there. Romans chapter 20. The last verse of chapter 19, it says, after he had said this, he dismissed the assembly. That's the city clerk in Ephesus in 55 AD dismissing they'd gone down to a theater, they had a riot. They'd gone down to the city and they were shouting, "Great is Artemis of the Ephesians," trying to, you know, undermine Paul's influence. And they want to bring charges against Paul, the Ephesians do, the silversmith, everybody that's involved in it. The city clerk, as you remember, comes down and gathers them together, interrupts their riot, and says, "Listen, there are laws. If you want to bring a complaint, you've got to go through the right channels. Our government we're under Roman occupation. Rome controls all of this. Rome has a system. If they find out we're rioting, they'll come take our rights away and rule us by themselves. Instead of letting us make decisions, they'll make them for us. They'll indeed come. They're not under Roman rule. as much as they are under Roman occupation. And it's a good thing for them. And so they warn, Rome can come in and just shut us down. And so they dismiss the assembly. That's the end of the riot. Now, verse chapter 20. When the uproar had ended, Paul sent for the disciples, that's the believers there in Ephesus, and after encouraging them, said goodbye and set out for Macedonia. So this is where he's going from Ephesus. He's going up to Macedonia. He's going to stop in Troas. We see that in 2 Corinthians. He says, we went to Troas, but he says, I was so excited about finding Titus and finding out what's going on in Corinth. He says, although we had an open door of opportunity, he says, I let it go and kept looking for Titus. Now, don't forget about Troas, because he's going to come back through Troas, and that's part of this chapter. This time he's going through, probably going to go to Illyricum, come down and go to Greece and solve some problems there, knowing that he could have gone to Troas or stayed in Troas, but he's going to skip that because he's more concerned about this mess down here. Now on his way back, when we read here in just a few moments, he's going to stop at Troas for a period of time, we're talking hours. Okay, he went to Macedonia and he passed through Troas. He traveled through that area. There it is right there. He traveled through that area. Now, that area would be Macedonia, but I'm including Illyricum. I mean, it's just miles away, especially because in Romans, he says, I've gone all the way to Illyricum. Now, again, you see how I'm reading into that. And traveled through that area, speaking many words of encouragement to the people, and finally arrived in Greece. See, you're not really caught in any kind. You're traveling through this area, Macedonia, and finally arriving in Greece. So somehow you've got to go from Macedonia, either come down the way he came the first time when he started the church, or come over to Illyricum and come down and finally arriving at Greece. Again, it's a suggestion, and it's not a bad suggestion. He traveled through the area, speaking of many words of encouragement to the people, and finally arrived in Greece, where he stayed 3 months. Now, while he's in Macedonia, he writes 2 Corinthians, and we've already talked about that letter. And then he comes down here, and he's going to spend 3 months in Greece, in Corinth. Now, it doesn't say Corinth in the text, but we're assuming he's in Corinth, not in Athens, because that's where his activity's at. And from here, he's going to write a letter to the Romans. And we've already gone through that letter to the Romans. And from when you read the letter of Romans, you get the impression he's in Corinth because of some of the things he says. Okay. Where he stayed 3 months because the Jews made a plot against him. Just as he was about to sail to Syria, he decided to go back through Macedonia. So as you know, I'm just kind of reviewing here as always. His intention is he wants to get to Jerusalem. With the money. He's collected the money. We're going to refer to that again later. And so he's probably going to go down to Centuria, the seaport, which is a very popular seaport. And he's leaving early enough that he could actually arrive at Antioch, his home church, and then come down to Jerusalem, potentially. That is not what's going to happen. If that was ever his plan to go to, because they're going to say, it does say Syria right there in the text. This is Antioch, Syria. By the time he gets ready, he's going to go straight into Caesarea and then go into Jerusalem by the time this gets done. And because the Jews were planning an assassination, he finds out there's an assassination plot against him. And that assassination plot is not just to take out Paul, but remember, there's a large sum of money, a significant sum of money that he's collected from all these Gentiles, not from the Jewish synagogues, not from the Jewish people to support Jewish people. The Gentiles have collected large amounts of money in their churches because Paul's told them that there are believers in Jerusalem who are Jews who've accepted Jesus Christ just as the Gentiles have, but they're being persecuted by their own brothers, their own Jews. Because some Jews have accepted Christ, some have rejected him, and they're persecuting the believers. So the Gentiles have collected a large sum of money, large enough that this whole delegation is coming to deliver the money. Each representing a church that's contributed or an area that's contributed. This is not a small offering. It's a big chunk of change. Again, and it's in coins that Paul's been collecting for 2, 3, 4, 5 years that has been being gathered, and it's all come together. So this assassination plot, if I want to read between the lines, you don't have to accept this, may not only include killing Paul, but putting an end, because they're trying to crush this rebellious religion in Jerusalem. The Jews are, like Paul used to be, the Christians are persecuting him. And this money is like relief for the rebels. It's relief to those who are coming against the Jewish ways. And so not only do they want to kill Paul, they want to put a stop to the delivery of this money. Maybe they want to steal the money and deliver it to the temple precincts or something like this instead of to the Christians. But Paul finds out as he's coming down, he's going to hit Centuria, sail to Syria, and then come to Jerusalem with this money. He finds out there's an assassination plot. So he decides to go by land back up to Macedonia to throw them off. Now, again, one of the points here is to realize the difficulty Paul is in. You have three basic groups of people. You can have Jews, Gentiles, and Christians. And, of course, you can divide that up differently. The Gentiles in Ephesus have just started a riot and are wanting to bring legal charges against Paul and punish him. That's how the Gentiles are responding. Paul's trying to get over to Corinth to put out a bonfire, not a bonfire, a huge fire, that's taken 2 years to get under control. Titus has finally got in control. And who's the problem there? Christians, or we should say fake Christians, or false teachers who are taking the Christians and misleading them. So Paul's got problems with the Gentiles who reject Christ and want to bring charges against him. During that time, he's got problems with Christians being misled by false teachers who are trying to discredit and destroy Paul because they want to take control of the church themselves and lead it back into Greek philosophy, more of a cultural relevance, so that, you know, they can prosper with it. So now he's got problems with Gentiles and problems with the church, but on his way to help the Jewish people out, who's trying to kill him? The Jews. So who, Paul's going to refer to this in 2 Corinthians. Where's Paul's safe space? It's not in the Gentile city with the Gentiles. It's not even in the church sometimes. And it's definitely not back home with the Jews. Paul is coming, Gentiles or unbelievers, believers and their false teachers, and the Jews are all trying to bring legal charges, destroy Paul's ministry, or kill Paul and take the money that he's collected to help people out. So that is a situation Paul finds himself in. And so again, you can feel sorry for yourself. You can feel sorry for the situation you're in. But Paul, what's he do right here? I would, like I said before, I'd have the tendency to just say, forget it. Everybody hates me. You know, I'm just going to go and you know, make tents in Corinth somewhere, maybe start my own little business. And like, but what's Paul do? Paul presses on. He keeps right on going. He expects this. Okay, where he stated for him in verse 2, he traveled through that area, speaking many words of encouragement, talking Macedonia. I'm adding Illyricum to that. To the people when finally arrived in Greece, and I think in Corinth, where he stayed 3 months in Corinth, and he's fixing the church there. Now, because the Jews had made a plot against him just as he's about to sail for Syria, see, from Corinth or Centuria over to Syria, that's why I say Antioch, because that's logical place, that's the port, and that's his home church, to Syria. Now, he never does go to Syria because he's going to run out of time. He decided to go back through Macedonia. He was accompanied by, now here's some names, Sopater, son of Pyrrhus, from Berea. So now this guy is from Berea, which is right over this area here in Galatia, kind of the same by Berea, Derbe, kind of where Timothy's from. Again, each of these guys, I'm going to make a suggestion. There's 7 of them that are going to be listed here. Timothy's going to be one of them. And then Luke's going to join them, and then Paul. So you've got basically a list of 7 delegates. Luke fits in here somewhere, and then Paul. These are the 7 guys, or 8 guys. Timothy may end up staying in Ephesus, but these are the people that are going to end up going with him to Jerusalem. And it's probably safe to assume each of them is representing some part. See, Berea, Thessalonica, Derbe, you got Ephesus here, Macedonia here, Asia here, and he's going to be doing some things with the Colossian church. So they're all probably representing, they're all Gentiles representing the churches that have collected this money. So here we go through this list. And I kind of want to make a big deal about this list because these are kind of, you know, just names you can just read through. He was accompanied by Sopater. Now, this is when he leaves Greece or Corinth and heads up to Macedonia. These are the people that are traveling with him. And they've got the money now. They've got the money. They made their final collection in Corinth. And probably each man is in charge of a certain bag of money or something. He was accompanied by Sopater, son of Pyrrhus, from Berea. Aristarchus and Secundus from Thessalonica. Those are guys from Macedonia. Gaius from Derbe. Timothy also. Timothy was from Derbe himself. And also Tychicus of Asia. These men went on ahead and waited for us at Troas. So, there you can see right there, it slips in there. They all travel up to Macedonia together. But then those men that were just listed went on ahead of us. Now, that's a big word because that's the first time it's been used since several chapters ago when he was left here. Us is who? Us is Luke. When he was left, Luke is here. And these others go ahead to Troas. And Paul stays here in Macedonia with Luke. And so right here, as they're sitting right here waiting, why did they go ahead and wait? Maybe there's something to take care of. It maybe is a dummy ship. Maybe it's, let's just get on a ship and sail and see what happens. Well, it doesn't say. It just means these guys went on ahead of Troas and Paul stayed behind and came later with Luke, a few days later, not a long time later. So there's a break there. To Macedonia, sailed to Syria. He decided to go back to Macedonia. He was accompanied by these guys right here. But we sailed from Philippi, and after the Feast of Unleavened Bread, 5 days later, joined the others at Troas, where we stayed 7 days. So he's going to spend 5 days in Macedonia. These other guys are going to leave right away. When Paul gets to Troas, he's going to spend 7 days there. So there's going to be a 12-day period right here from Macedonia until they leave Troas. Now, these names right here, you can see them on your Bible. You can see them on your notes. Aristarchus is one of them. He's from Macedonia. He was one of them. If you go back to read the account in the chapter before, he was seized at Ephesus. Aristarchus was seized and brought into the theater by the rioters in Ephesus. So he's been in the middle of a riot in Ephesus. He is then on the prison ship in Acts 27. So he was with Paul in Ephesus, was brought into the riot, into the theater. He travels with Paul back down into Corinth. He comes up here as one of the delegates, goes ahead to Troas. Paul's going to catch up with them. Then they're going to sail to Jerusalem. And all of the events that take place in Jerusalem, Paul's going to end up in prison in Caesarea for 3 years. When he gets on the prison ship for that journey to Rome, right here, Aristarchus is still there. He gets on the prison ship and sails with Paul to Rome. That's just kind of interesting to know. And then he is in the rented apartment. When Paul's in that rented apartment, Aristarchus is still with him. And you can see in Colossians 4 and Philippians 1:24, when he sends those letters from Rome over into Asia right here, Aristarchus is mentioned. So we know a lot about Timothy because we've got 1 Timothy, 2 Timothy. We hear about Timothy. But Timothy isn't alone. You know, it's not just Paul and Timothy against the world. Aristarchus was in the theater in the midst of the riot. He leaves with Paul, comes down to Corinth. He travels up after the assassination, travels up, goes ahead, meets Paul, goes to Jerusalem, is there in Jerusalem, in Judea for 3 years, waiting. Apparently, maybe he went and came back. We don't know. But he might have been waiting. Luke is also here. I'm going to mention this real quickly. Luke is also picks up here, travels down to Jerusalem, and Luke is also here during that three-year period, which is interesting because this is when Paul, this may be where Paul or Luke is able to write at the beginning of Luke, I have talked to the eyewitnesses of these accounts. I've carefully investigated, and he begins his book. Meaning when he gets down here in 57, 58, 59, 60 AD, we're only 30 years, 27 to 30 years away from the original day of Pentecost, and many of these people, including Mary, are still alive. And they're meeting together. They're easy to find because they're having services together. They're meeting together. You get into a home, and Luke, it'd be very easy for Luke to ask questions. The book of Matthew's already been written. Mark, apparently, has been collecting information. And so, these things have been put together. John isn't written yet. But Luke, and there's other accounts. I should say that again. John is going to be written around 85 AD. Matthew is written at this time. Mark is using some source of information. So this information is out there already, Matthew and Mark. But when Luke begins the Gospel of Luke, he says, many have undertaken to record the events that have happened among us. And the only ones we've got is one, maybe two. Luke is being written. John is not written yet for another 30 years. So when he says many, this is not considered many, one, two. So there are unquestionable amount numbers of people that have recorded things They may have been used and collected together. They may have become a source of information. But there's others, and Luke is basically going out trying to correct the errors. I'm adding this. He's carefully investigated so that you might know accurately the things that have happened. And he's talking to eyewitnesses, Things have possibly drifted off in, this is important, they could have drifted in 30 years, things have could have drifted into legendary form. Things have been added to it. Things have been recreated. Because the church is not like structured. The Holy Spirit's moving. Jesus Christ has come. There's a truth there. But you're still, there's still that natural tendency. And so Luke maybe is the one who cleaned up the gospel accounts. I'm not saying cleaned them up so that they're, false, but got rid of some of these many. Where are these many at? They're not there. Now again, when we start talking about the Gospel of Thomas and the Gnostic writings, that's going to come later. That's coming later. Those are clearly forgeries. That's clearly things that were written many years later, several years later. We're not even talking about that. So it's easy. When you look at Luke, the book of Luke, the historical detail, when we start talking about sailing through these cities right here or through this right here, he's giving you detail that's not legend. It's like he's giving you a travel report. When he writes the book of Acts, and in the framework book, we cover this. We go through the book of Acts. I almost brought in a copy of it. I have a list on there, several reasons why the book of Acts was written before 70 AD by Luke because of the things that are in there. It leaves Paul in prison, and there's good relations between the Jews and the Romans at the end of the book of Acts. They're still interacting with each other. Christians are not being burned at the stake. Paul is staying in his own rented apartment, meaning it's got to be before 64 AD, because in 64 AD, Nero starts burning Christians. By 66 AD, the Jewish wars have broken out. Acts has to be written sometime, well, while Paul's in prison. And I mean, it's unless it's a glorious fabrication of false information, but that's not the way it's written. I mean, it's written as if Luke had boots on the ground, and it was written from this window of time before the Christian persecution by Nero, before the Jewish wars broke out, which puts us pre 64 AD, which Paul is in prison in Rome in 62 AD, which is exactly the time frame it seems to be written. When they leave Jerusalem, the Sanhedrin is still in control. They're still meeting. Paul had to appear before him. So there's still Sanhedrin control. Rome is there, but the Sanhedrin are the ones making the rules and enforcing the rules that they're allowed to enforce. So all this, and there's not even a hint, there's not even a prophecy in the book of Acts that the temple will be destroyed or that the Roman wars are coming or any of Christian persecutions coming. The Jews were free to come and go. When Paul's in Rome, it says that as the book of Acts ends, the Jews are free to come and go and visit with Paul, and Paul ends up quoting Old Testament verses to him saying, this is what the Old Testament said, you're going to have a hard heart and you're going to reject this. You're doing exactly what your forefathers did. And thus he's arguing with the Jews, converting the Gentiles in Rome, arguing with the Jews who are resistant while Rome is watching with their guards standing, listening to the Christians and Jews argue in the city of Rome. That's not 64 A.D. That's 62 A.D. That's not 66 A.D. That's 62 A.D. material. And the whole book is written. So when we talk about Luke being a historian, being authentic, you're on really, really shaky ground when you start trying to undermine the writings of Luke in Luke or in the book of Acts, because it's completely surrounded with authentic, especially all these cities. And the more he goes through and he refers to customs, languages that people don't know. Archaeology is uncovering some things that no one's known except the author of the book of Luke. Luke was criticized in the book in the 1800s, like everything was, because it's obviously a forgery, because we've never found that to be true. Until you start doing excavation, it's like, oh, well, here's that name right here inscribed in a stone. And so again, have some confidence, and I know you do, but don't let modern culture undermine the authority or the authenticity of the scriptures. Now, Aristarchus, Macedonia, he was in Ephesus, and he was with Paul in his rented apartment and carried some letters, or at least was mentioned in these letters. So Aristarchus, again, my whole point was that's similar to a Timothy-type character. Next, Tychicus is from Asia. He was also in the rented apartment in Rome, or was mentioned there. He carried the letters, it appears, of Colossians and Ephesus, carries them back to Asia Minor. He was sent to replace Titus. In Titus 3:12, when Paul gets out of prison at the end of the book of Acts, which Acts doesn't record, out here on the island of Cyprus, Titus has gone out here, Crete, Titus has gone out here and is overseeing that. He sends a letter to Titus, we've got it here, and in there, in chapter 3, verse 12, Tychicus' name is mentioned as being, I'm going to send Tychicus, and as soon as you can, get him in control, and you come visit me. I'm going to be staying at a resort over here, on Neapolis, on one of these resort islands for the winter, which is like, kind of nice to hear Paul kind of, I'll be on a resort for the winter. It's like, kind of gives you a little bit of room to take a vacation now and then. And so anyway, that's Tychicus, who's going to replace Titus, and he's still with Paul, and this is important, 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 12. That's the Paul's last letter. That's his, I'm being poured out like a drink offering. He's going to die this time. Now they're past 64 AD. The Christian persecutions have broken out. Now it's 67 fall, 68 spring. Nero's in control. He's going to kill himself early in 68. So this has got to be the time. And Paul is in prison, and he says, no one came to my support. Again, the Lord not hold it against him. In 62 AD, the Jews and Christians are all coming and going in his rented apartment. But when he writes 2 Timothy, no one steps up and comes. He stands in front of Nero by himself. Where's the Christian support? Where's the church support? Gone. Now be careful. When he comes to Rome on this prison ship, when he comes to Rome, the church goes out to meet him, greets him. Same word when we say, meet the Lord in the air. They go out to meet Paul on the coast. They go out to meet him, to bring him back into their city. Just, you know, that's a good rapture verse right there. Paul's coming into their city. They're going off to meet him, to bring him back. Okay. But anyway, the church openly walks down the road, walks out of the city, walks to a tavern hotel place where Paul's ship is arriving, and takes him back into the city. And they came and visited him. Supported him, his own rented apartment. How is he paying for his rented apartment? The church is probably paying for it because he's not got any money. You know, he's sitting there waiting for 2 years. But in 2 Timothy, he says he's back in Roman prison. He's probably in a dungeon situation. He says, tells Timothy, no one came to my support. May it not be held against him. Why? The world has changed from 62 or 60 AD. Because in 64 AD, great persecution broke out. Nero's killing people. He executes Peter, burning Christians on stake, feeding them to the lions in the arena. And to step up and say, I'm on Paul's side, is saying, shoot me here. Well, or cut my head off. They didn't shoot. But you understand, you can't support Paul because your support would eliminate you. No one's going to listen to you. It's a waste of time. That's why he says, they're not supporting me. He says, no one came to my support because it'd be worthless. I'm on my own. He says, but the Lord stood by my side. So the point here is in that prison, he does send a letter to Timothy, and Timothy's supposed to come visit him. Tychicus is with him. In 2 Timothy 4:12, he mentions Tychicus, and he's still being faithful. Paul's still giving some people directions. Paul says in that same chapter, everyone in Asia has deserted me because of persecution, but there are some faithful people. Timothy's one of them. Tychicus, who's mentioned here, is still with Paul and is ministering with him. Just interesting facts. Okay, so we don't know much about Sopater. He's from Berea. He is mentioned in Romans 16:21. Secundus from Thessalonica. Gaius from Derbe. Timothy's also from the same place. And then here's an important name you want to remember. Trophimius. Trophimius. He's from Asia, specifically from Ephesus. Now, when Paul gets to Jerusalem, remember, he's going to go meet with the church leaders. And they're going to say, Paul, you've got a bad name here. Because us Jewish believers are finding out that we're being told that you're telling people to forget the law of Moses, forget the temple worship, that you're forgetting the whole Old Testament. Now, what we'd like you to do is go up on the Temple Mount and show everybody that you're still in rhythm with the Jews. Now, again, the Jews are in a tough situation. They've accepted Jesus Christ as Messiah, but they still are in their culture. They're not just, you know, burning down the temple, and they're still following the law. James, Jesus' brother, historically followed it all the way up until his death. In fact, that's where he was pushed from the Temple Mount. So it is possible to be a Christian and still honor the Old Testament, especially if you're Jewish and you're in that culture and you grew up in it. Paul, they say, we would like to have you go up onto the Temple Mount. And he does. We'll read that here in a little bit. But when he gets there, and the Jews see him. Do you think the Jews know who Paul is? Remember, you go back to 30 AD, he had access to the high priest. He was one of those trained by Gamaliel. He was one of the leaders of the up-and-coming next generation of the scholars, of the Pharisees. He was a Pharisee of Pharisees. His dad was a Pharisee. He'd grown up at the age of 12. He'd grown up in Jerusalem, and everybody knew Paul. And he has killed Christians. So, I mean, the Christians knew him. The Jews knew him. They remembered going to class with him, being outsmarted. Always, he always got the best grade, and they always got the B's and the C's because Paul was always... He records that in Galatians, if you want to, you know, expand on a little bit like I just did. Well, anyway, when he gets up there, they recognize Paul. And once again, just like the Ephesians started a riot, the Jews start a protest on the Temple Mount, and they make an accusation that Paul, remember, if we had a map of the temple precincts, there's a place for the Gentiles, that you could come up so far close to the temple, so far as a Gentile. Alexander the Great went up that far. He went and worshipped the God of the Jews in the Gentile courts. Then there's the next court, the court of the women. The women could go past the Gentiles. They could go a little bit closer, the court of the women. And then there was the court of the Jews, where they could go into the Jewish precinct, and only the men could go there, only the Jewish men. Not even a Gentile convert could go there. You had to be a Jewish man to go into this area. And that's not unusual, because only the priest could approach and go into the altar area, per se, and go into the inside of the temple, into where the light stands were and the table of showbread. But only the high priest himself, one man, once a year, could go into the most holy place. You understand what I'm saying? So it's not like, well, it's they're against women. Well, no. They're against Gentiles. No, it's like Gentiles, women, Jewish men, priests and Levites, priests, and the high priest once a year, only once a year. So, I mean, the whole thing was a hierarchy of who could go where. Now, there's barriers, and I've told you this before. They have found two stones. One was in the Kidron Valley, another was in, I think, northern part of the city of Jerusalem. When they're excavating, they found two stones that say, there had an inscription on there, do not go beyond this point. It was that warning. It's mentioned in Galatians. It was that warning. If you go beyond this point, your death is your own fault. Warning the Gentiles. This is only for Jewish people. You cannot go past this point. Josephus records it. Paul refers to it, the dividing wall of hostility in the book of Galatians. We found two stones with that warning that matches Josephus' inscription that he says was on there. We found two of them. And when Paul goes up to the Temple Mount, when he gets to Jerusalem, the Jews see him and they assume that they claim that he brings Trophimus into the Jewish quarter, which is enough to violate. I mean, it's not just you're in trouble, we've got to kill you. That has to happen. But also, the temple has been desecrated. They shut it. It's like shutting down the shopping mall. We've got to close all the stores. We've got to clean all the shelves, sweep the whole place up, and re-anoint every store. We've got to have a grand opening for every store again. It's like, oh. So in other words, he's just like when the Seleucids came in and offered pig meat on the altar. Boom, they had to shut it down. The Jews, they couldn't use it anymore because it had been desecrated. Trophimus would have desecrated the temple, and everything would have came to a scream and stop. And so when they start this, they start a riot. Paul's arrested. Anyway, that's this guy. And he's with Paul in Jerusalem, but he didn't go across this line. Now, if you're still with me, this is the case that Paul is going to be in Caesarea for 3 years, sent to Rome, and Nero's going to hear and make a final decision on. Paul says, I appeal to Caesar in Caesarea, because the Jews are trying, for 3 years, they try to kill Paul while he's in prison, kept trying to find a way to get him transferred, some kind of, they're still trying to kill him. For 3 years, they started trying to kill him leaving Corinth. They're going to try to kill him all the way for the next 3 years, until Paul says, my only way out of this is to go to Nero. I appeal to Caesar, because he knows if he gets let free here, he's dead. So they put him on a prison ship and send him to Nero. He's got to wait 2 full years in a rented apartment, which is not a bad gig because you're living in an apartment. There's a Roman guard there, but people are coming and going, bringing you food, talking. He's arguing with the Jews, teaching the church there. And there's continual fellowship with the church there. And then Nero's going to hear the case. Now, what do you think Nero's going to think? It's like, what wall? What the Jewish... No, let it go. And Paul, that's when he writes these letters, when he writes to the Philippians and the Ephesians and stuff, he's fairly confident this isn't going to amount to anything. Completely different attitude than in 2 Timothy. When he writes in 2 Timothy, it's like, I'm being poured out like a drink offering. No one's supporting me. The Lord stood by my side. But this is it. This time, it's like, he gets over going, Nero's not going to even understand the question. And Nero dismisses the case, apparently, and Paul's set free. Anyway, Trophimus is the one who was accused of doing that in Acts 21. And he's still with Paul in 2 Timothy 4:20. He's still with Paul at the end. He's another Timothy standing with Paul until the end. But what's interesting is on his last trip, we don't know if he came back from Spain, stopped at Crete, saw Titus, and then comes up to here. He's arrested in Troas, apparently, and then taken to Rome for his final imprisonment. He must have gone through Miletus, because in 2 Timothy, he tells Timothy that he left Trophimus, left him behind sick in Miletus. And so that's at the end. He's still with Paul, traveling with him, but he's got to move on, and somehow he's sick and leaves him there. Now, these are just names. I just wanted to, especially Aristarchus, Tychicus, and Trophimus, all these guys are players in Paul's ministry that we can see throughout the letters, up until the very end. They're still standing with him, along with Timothy. Now, these are the seven delegates, okay? And Luke is with Paul. Luke is with Paul in Macedonia. These seven go ahead into Troas. Paul joins Luke, or Luke joins Paul, and they join him in a few days. And what's going to take place here next week, I didn't get as far as I wanted to, these delegates are going to get on a ship, and they're going to sail around to Assos, right here. But Paul, for some reason, maybe it's another... Notice Paul's sending the ship and then catching up later. He does that once from Macedonia to Troas. He does the same thing here. You can read the verse. He sends them ahead, but he knows a shortcut across land. He goes by land and says, I'll meet you at the seaport. Now, one of two things. He wants to spend more time in Troas, because remember, a great door of opportunity was there, and he skipped it on his way to find Titus. Or he's still playing the game, who's on that ship? And comes on, and then he gets there, who was on the ship? And it's like, so assuming they've given up on Paul, they don't know where Paul's at, the assassins, and now he feels safe, he gets on the ship and spends the rest of the time there. So, just so you know, both times, the delegation leaves, Paul catches up, delegation leaves, Paul walks across by land to catch up to that. We'll pick this up next week. I do appreciate you coming back, and as always, it even means more if you come back again. You know, it's always... nice to try something and see if the broken man can still stand. And I appreciate you being here. It's a relief to get through this. And we'll be back on track Monday night, Tuesday night. I'm going to check with Tony when she gets here. I'll make up a calendar for November and December, so you know when the meetings are and stuff. But we'll just keep right on going. We're back up, rocking and rolling. And I feel great. I have no, usually at this point right here, I have pain, you know, and I've got it when you all leave. I laid on the floor and just let my back rest. But right now, it's like that's amazing. I mean, it's like it's a gift. It's a gift. You can feel sorry for me, but at the same time, it's a gift. I just got to be smart and not break the gift, because you know, if I was 77 or 87, it'd be a different story. But I'm 57, and I can still lift sheetrock if I tried, and I can't try. So anyway, thank you so much for being here. I'm going to pray, and then you're free to go. Father, do thank you for your word. We thank you for the insight we have into these times of Paul's ministry and the spreading of the gospel. We ask that we may do our part at this time to continue the work of the church, continue the work that you began in the day of Pentecost with the coming of the Holy Spirit, that we would continue to spread the word of God, be encouraged by the things you've given to us, and use this word of God as a source of truth and motivation. Again, we thank you for this chance to meet in our country. We do pray for our nation. We pray for our churches. And ask that we may see revival in our own time. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Thank you for your patience.